Good afternoon, everyone, or good morning if you're in the Western Hemisphere, and good evening if you're in Asia. My name is Professor Chris Alden. I'm director of LSE Ideas, a foreign policy think tank, along with our colleagues at the Latin American Caribbean Center here at the LSE, and of course our colleagues at CAF, the Latin American Development Bank, and the OECD. We're here to host a webinar about the findings of a report produced by the OECD, the Latin American Economic Outlook of 2021, working together for better recovery. This is a really wonderful opportunity for us to explore some important dimensions of the recovery period, the post-COVID era that we seem to be entering. I say that with caution, but of course with hope as well. And we have a great group of speakers today brought together who can share some of their insights into that through the research that they've produced. If I may start by introducing the first speaker. It's Raga Elin Arnadottir, who's director of the OECD Development Center. She has been a director since August 2021, served in the Ministry of Industry and Commerce in Iceland from 2013 to 2017, and was an elected member of Parliament for the Independent Party for nearly a decade before that. She has a very long and distinguished CV, which I will refer you to on the cover page of our website. But suffice to say, she has played a tremendous role, an important role in Atlantic Council and in Icelandic National Broadcasting Company and the American Icelandic Chamber of Commerce. If I could ask Raga to open this session.
Thank you very much, Professor Alden. Chris, kindly referred to told me that I could refer to you, and dear colleagues and students, and good afternoon to all of you here from Paris, to you in London, and then as Professor Alden said, good morning to everyone joining us from Latin America and the Caribbean. And what a pleasure it is to be joining you, although it's virtually, and I share the sentiment that you said, Chris, that we cautiously celebrate or have a good feeling about hopefully the end of COVID, but we have done that before, so cautious is the right word. But we are here virtually at the London School of Economics, an inspiring place to reflect and debate and challenge our ideas. I'm very happy with the collaboration that we have with LSE, and in particular with its Global South Unit, a cooperation that we truly value. And there's no doubt now more than ever, with the uncertainty that we face, that we need to exchange perspectives and strengthen our alliances between international organizations and academics. And today is a great example of that. And we are here today to present and discuss the key findings of the latest edition of the Latin American Economic Outlook, also known here at the OECD Development Center as the LEO. For those of you who don't know it, it's a publication which is the product of very close collaboration between the OECD Development Center, the United Nations Economic Commission for Latin America, UNECLAC, and the Caribbean CAF Development Bank. The Economic Commission for Latin America and the Caribbean, and then of CAF, the Development Bank of Latin America, as well as the European Commission. Special thanks to you, to our colleagues from CAF that also helped organize this event, and a special welcome to a new colleague, and I look forward to working with you in the future. And with that, allow me to delve right into the topic of the day. the LEO 2021 presents some sobering facts on the challenges that the LAC region is currently facing. GDP per capita in the region is not expected to return to pre-crisis levels before 2023-2024. Poverty rates have never been so high in 12 years, and the same goes for extreme poverty, which is at its highest in the last 20 years. Moreover, citizens' satisfaction with public services has significantly declined during the pandemic. But despite this gloomy outlook, we also saw that LAC governments were able to react swiftly with ambitious and efficient policies to address the emergency. And in fact, without the measures that they took, the consequences of the crisis could have been a lot more drastic for poverty and for inequality. For instance, although inequality in LAC increased by 2.9% as a result of the crisis, without government transfers to mitigate the loss of labor income, inequality would have doubled or gone up to 5.6%. And we have a responsibility to turn this crisis into an opportunity for a strong recovery and greater citizens' well-being, accelerating progress towards the United Nations 2030 agenda. And that is the objective of our LEO 2021, which puts forward a number of priority areas for action. If I name only a few, first, to improve social protection mechanisms by learning from successful experiences during the crisis of reaching the most vulnerable workers. Secondly, I want to mention fiscal policy that must continue to drive the recovery with a holistic response that includes fairer tax systems, more efficient public expenditure, and sustainable public debt. Thirdly, investing in innovative productive strategies and deepening regional integration. Fourthly, trust must be restored. The region needs to renew its social contract. And last but not least, international cooperation must play a crucial role, and multilateralism is essential to address the cross-border nature of the challenges that we have in front of us. Dear Professor Alden, dear Chris, dear colleagues, as the director of the OECD Development Center, I am very proud to see that the LEO is much more than a flagship publication. As we can see here today, it's a platform for dialogue and exchange to identify and co-create and promote better policies to improve Latin Americans' well-being. And it's in that spirit that I expect a very rich debate ahead of us based on these findings and the presentations by Adriana and Sebastian in just a few minutes, as well as on the questions and comments from the audience that I'm sure will challenge all of our perspectives. I'm very much looking forward to pursuing a collaboration with the London School of Economics, and particularly with LSE Ideas and the LSE Global South Unit, to support together the recovery agenda in the region, as well as in other emerging economies. So with that, I thank you very much again for the good cooperation, and I look forward to the conversation that will ensue.
Thank you very much, Raga. That was a great introduction to what's going to be a rich set of presentations to follow. Let me turn without further ado to our first speaker, Dr. Adriana Arez-Cole. She's the Director of Macroeconomic Studies at CAF, the Development Bank of Latin America, and coordinates country economists contributing to the research publications at CAF. Is also she's an assistant professor, Department of Economics at the University Católica Andrés Bello in Caracas, and has worked at the Development Bank of Central Bank of Venezuela. Adriana, if I could turn to you for your words.
Sure, Chris, thank you very much. It is a pleasure to be here with Sebastian and Raga. Our partnership is long, and it has deepened over the years to work in this publication. So I wish to thank LSE for this opportunity and all the attendees to this conference today, which hopefully could be in person next year once the pandemic is over. As Raga said, many times we thought this is passing. We hope this time is for real. So I'm going to be sharing the presentation right now. Okay. Can you see it? Good. Okay, so I'm going to start by mentioning the three pillars of this report. First of all, we address the sobering impact, as Raga mentioned, of the COVID-19 crisis in Latin America. And then what can governments do or we think they should do to overcome this crisis and revert the serious socioeconomic implications that it had. And this is through fiscal policy, which is going to be key for our short-term recovery, but also addressing a debt that we have with societies, which is to strengthen the social safety nets in the region. We saw the weakness of the social protection networks in the region very clearly throughout the pandemic. And finally, one of the problems that takes a toll on growth in the region and improvement is a shortfall in productivity that could be addressed through regional integration as a catalyst for productive transformation. We also want to address how we think this should be done, rethinking a new social contract that involves taxation and a different productive tissue for the region, but also the role of a renewed international cooperation to boost and also help this to take place, which also, of course, includes financing for development. So let me start by getting into the impact of this crisis. Latin America was one of the regions that was most affected by this crisis, not only in the death toll that it took in per capita terms, the region, some countries in the region have the highest rates. And in general, one third of the functions in the world came from Latin America, but we're just less than 8% of the global population. So this speaks for itself about the deep impact this had. Also, Latin America experienced one of the deepest recessions worldwide. Output growth dipped to 7%. There was a 7% contraction in 2020. And in spite of the swift recovery that we witnessed last year as economies reopened and global conditions improved, we're not expecting that the region will reach the per capita GDP levels before 2023 in most countries. And that has to do with some of the sectors that are still lagging in the region related to tourism, but other issues relate to productivity, which we'll address further on in the presentation. This, of course, had a social impact, a deep one, and the most vulnerable were the most affected throughout the crisis. As we can see, poverty levels dropped to numbers that we haven't seen in over a decade, as Raga mentioned as well. But with the recovery, there was a decrease in total poverty levels, an improvement in in the middle classes that regained some of their income, but extreme poverty continued to increase in the region. And this has to do, as I'll get into soon, with informality, but also through to the lack of social protection. So as we see, extreme poverty kept increasing last year, as opposed to total poverty that with the recovery so went back to 32% of the population after reaching a third of the entire population in Latin America. But something else that this chart highlights is the fact that the poverty reduction process that had begun 20 years ago pretty much stagnated over since 2015 in the region, and that also has to do with the low productivity that Sebastian will address in a few minutes. Something that Raga mentioned as well, and that was critical for the region, because otherwise the social impact of the crisis would have been much worse, is the fact that governments addressed the situation through fiscal policy and through monetary policy swiftly and in large amounts. Of course, this implied getting creative, sometimes even if there were no formal systems of unemployment insurance in some countries. Countries resorted to the databases of the transfers, the conditional transfer systems to have those transfers get to the most vulnerable families, which is clearly the case in Brazil. Without this aid, we would have seen a much larger deterioration in social conditions. But having said that, as we saw before, part of the population, part of the most vulnerable were still the ones that suffered most with the crisis. And within this group are the informal workers. Informality represents a large chunk of total employment in Latin America, and about 40% of workers in Latin America have no access to social insurance or the main social assistance schemes. And of course, the most vulnerable workers and the poor informal workers are the more affected. So that explains in part why, even considering the swift action by governments in the region, some part of the population was unable to receive these benefits because they're outside of the social safety net. So this is something that the region should address. Having said this, the swift action by governments implied a depletion of fiscal space in many countries. Fiscal space had been decreasing since the end of the commodity supercycle in 2015, and the region had even less space to address the crisis than during the financial crisis or during the end of the commodity boom, but the region responded. But of course, that implied that the fiscal space is very limited right now to address any further crisis in the future. So fiscal space should be restored. The region resorted to increasing debt levels. In good conditions, most countries with market access were able to issue debt in very good conditions, in domestic currency, but also in international currency over the past 20 years, and this is an important issue. Latin American countries have developed their domestic debt markets, and that helped not only cover part of the indebtedness within the region, but that of course also reduces the exposure to exchange rate volatility. So this was important, and markets were still had appetite for Latin American debt, and that still sustains. But Market conditions are changing. Countries need to restore fiscal sustainability. So the changes are needed to increase social protection in Latin America cannot be addressed with further indebtedness, because we know that is not sustainable. So we need to address that in time through an overhaul of the tax systems in Latin America. As we see, compared to OECD countries, most Latin American countries have low fiscal pressure. Total tax revenues as a percentage of GDP can be as high, as low as 13% of GDP in Guatemala and in Central American countries, and also as high as 33% in some countries in the southern cone, which is closer to developed nations and OECD levels. But there's an ample scope to increase taxation in the region, especially in Central America, but also in Andean countries. If you compare this to the per capita GDP in some countries, particularly again in the Andean countries and in Mexico, this is even below what we would expect it to be. So there's ample space to increase taxation, of course, taking into consideration efficiency issues. But it's just not a matter of the total amount of taxation. It's a matter of progressiveness of tax systems and how to change their composition. Of course, Latin American countries have done a lot to improve their tax basis over the last 30 years, but reducing more distortionary taxes as tariffs, for instance, but also by increasing VAT taxes, which tend to be more regressive. While personal income tax in OECD countries is a way to improve progressiveness on incomes, that is not the case in Latin America. Corporate taxes rely more on corporate taxation than on personal taxation. And therefore, in the future, we should think more in terms of increasing or moving more to more progressive taxation, as opposed to relying so much on VAT taxes that tend to be regressive. But of course, this also has an explanation, which is informality and taxing persons and corporations with such a large percentage of informal firms and workers in the region is, of course, a challenge. So this requires a change in the productive tissue in the region, as Sebastián will address in a few minutes. And I'm just going to end with this slide. So changing the situation in Latin America, improving the outlook for progressive taxation requires a lot of communication. Fiscal policy is still needed to back growth in the region, to back the recovery. Countries understand that, and they've only removed part of the help as the recovery has continued, but a swift removal of the transfers could derail growth in the future. Also, nobody likes to be taxed. So any change in the future in the taxation systems in the region require not just a good sequencing, but also effective communications in order to be backed by a broader consensus in society. And finally, international coordination will be critical to address some cases in countries where debt levels are already high, and the sooner that sustainability issues are addressed and debt is renegotiated, the better for these countries. And this, of course, will require international coordination. And I'm going to stop here and leave the floor to the virtual floor to Sebastian.
Thank you, Adriana. And please let me, before continuing the presentation, to thank LSE, and in particular, LSE Global South Unit, LSE Ideas, LSE Latin America and the Caribbean Center for this kind invitation. So Professor Chris Alden, this is a pleasure to see you again, as well as Alvaro Mendez. So let me continue this presentation that is a joint report, as we said before, between CAF, the European Commission, and UNECLAC. And welcome, by the way, Ignacio Corazzoli to the LEO team as a new representative of CAF in Europe and beyond, if I understand well. So in terms of the policy issues that we see important for Latin America, Adriana has already mentioned the importance of the fiscal policy. Let me now focus on the social side. On the social side, first, a key aspect is related to the education. And we saw that in Latin America, the number of days that the schools have been closed have been larger than what we had at the OECD. So now the question is how to close this gap, and in particular, how we can support the teachers, the institutions, the families, in terms to close the gap, not only in terms of the coverage of education, but the performance of education as well. So that's a key concern for the recovery. And this is a long-term policy because the human capital gonna have a huge impact in terms of productivity for the region. So that's one of the elements that we insist a lot in the report. A second element that we insist a lot in the report is about the social protection systems. So that's what we have in the next slide. By looking at the policy responses that Adriana mentioned before, that had an important impact in terms of equity and poverty. So here the question today is how we can support these social programs for the recovery, how we can adapt these social programs in terms of new policies that are needed to create formal jobs, but at the same time to avoid the further increases in terms of poverty. So we had the experience of horizontal programs. So that's new programs that benefit non-covered citizens, but at the same time, vertical programs. That was the idea to increase the benefits to those already covered by the already existing programs before the COVID-19 crisis. So we had great examples, that the case of Ingreso Familiar de Emergencia in Argentina, Auxilio Emergencial in Brazil, Ingreso Familiar de Emergencia in Chile, or Ingreso Solidario in Colombia, or the Bono Familiar Universal in Peru. So these examples are key for the recovery in terms of how we can coordinate the implementation of these programs with the already existing programs, how we are going to add some conditionalities, for instance, related to skills or education within the households that benefit from this program. So that's a key dimension for the discussion today in Latin America. And secondly, what's the unity of analysis that we need to take into account? This is what we have in the next slide. The next slide, we see the importance of the analysis at the household level, how we can define these programs, taking into consideration the huge number of informal households that we have in Latin America. It's more than 45% of the total households. And in particular, when we look at these households, we see high dependencies, like elderly population or children that are within these households. So the idea is to see in a comprehensive approach the response to the high informality and at the end, the high poverty levels that we have today in Latin America. Last but not least, when we talk about the social policies, but that goes beyond the social policies, is the focus on the gender dimension that we have in the next slide. We see that the gender dimension is one of the most affected by the crisis. Why? Because we see that most of the women were working in some activities that have been closely affected by the crisis, like the service, like the commerce, like the tourism, or hospitality. So here, the point is the specific support that we need for women in order to create jobs for them, but at the same time to have a good balance with the social life. So this is a key question for the recording when we talk about the social dimension as well in Latin America. Now let me turn to the third dimension, that is more about the productivity side. And here in the report, we insist a lot on the regional integration. And as we see in this figure, this is a key concern for Latin America. When we look at the share of the intra-regional exports in Latin America, how in the past decade, it has been decreasing, and today the exports from Latin America within the region only represents 30%. So this is something that we need to take into account, the 13% of the exports within the region. This is a key dimension in which we need to look at the different barriers, not only in terms of trade, like infrastructure, logistics, or different soft solutions, but at the same time, what kind of a strategy we can have at the productivity level that can boost the regional integration. And that's what we have in the next slide when we look at different sectors in which we see that there are some opportunities. So the, here at the end, and this is a good news for Latin America, is that when we look at the percentage of manufacturing exports within the region is much higher than what we have outside the region. So there is an opportunity to exploit with these numbers and how at the end of the day we can create further value added and formal jobs thanks to the regional integration. And in terms of the sectors, we see some opportunities. We have the pharmaceutical sector. We see as well the automotive sector or the sustainable agriculture sector where there are important opportunities to increase regional integration, to increase competitiveness, and at the end of the day, to create formal jobs. So these are the three elements that we have in the report. Adriana has already mentioned the fiscal policy. I mentioned the social part with education, social protection systems, and gender equality. And finally, the last element that we see is productivity thanks to regional integration. Now, let me conclude the presentation with the how we can implement these reforms and why we need to include the citizens and the involvement of different actors when we talk about the implementation of the reforms. Why? Because there is a need to have a new social contract, given the high discontent that we have in Latin America, and we see in this figure that that's something that we observed before the crisis, and that was the social discontent in Chile, in Colombia, in Peru, before the crisis, and then with the crisis, we had the same in other countries in the region, including Cuba, for instance, where we had as well some social discontent. So here, behind this point is not only how we can improve the quality of public services as we see for the case of education and health, but at the same time, how we can create confidence in institutions, how we can show to the citizens that at the end of the day, we are implementing reforms to improve the anti-corruption policies in the region. So here, a key aspect is to involve them in the policymaking process. And what we see at the end of the day is to have different pacts within the social contract where we see the next slide, we're gonna see that there are policies that we mentioned before, like the productivity policies, the social protection policies, the sustainable finance aspects, and how we can combine these elements with key actors like the socioeconomic groups, the territories, and across generations. For instance, we need to think how we can have sustainable finance by taking into consideration the generations. And behind this is to have a good management of the public debt and to avoid debt crisis in the future. A second, for instance, element that we see is how across territories we can have a productivity strategy. And here we see like the local potential thanks to clusters that we can develop within the region. So that's a kind of examples that we need to exploit and we need to analyze to implement the social contract in Latin America. At the end of the day, we need a social contract that should be fair, legitimate, and stable, where we see the importance of the involvement of different actors in the social contract. How can this contract be implemented? And this is what we have in the next slide. So here, let me focus on three elements that we insist in the report. The first one is about the process and the sequencing of policy reform to achieve consensus. And we talk about the four C's, how to conciliate. So at the end is how to have the same table, different actors, how to take into account the context. And here is related to the sequencing of actions. For instance, at the tax level, we have some measures that we can take today, others that we cannot take today and we can leave for the future. I'm thinking, for instance, on environmental related taxes or the tax base that is quite difficult today in the context of the recovery to implement directly this kind of reforms. However, there are some measures that we can implement today, like tax evasion policies, like the different measures that we have adopted at the OECD in terms of the digital taxation, or how to rethink some tax expenditures or the higher progressivity of the personal income tax. Compensate, this is key. And here, continuing with the example of the fiscal policy is the case, for instance, of the VAT, how to compensate the most affected population. So the VAT system is a way in which we need to compensate the most vulnerable population. And last but not least, communicate. And here at the OECD, but that's the same for all the international organizations, the empirical evidence, the stylized facts that we provide can help to have objective discussion in terms of the policy reforms that are. Second element to take into account is how to overcome the structural barriers to policy reform and implementation. Here, an aspect that we want to insist on is on the policy capture that goes beyond the corruption. And here we have key examples in which we need to tackle in Latin America, particularly when we see the importance of the lobby, for instance, when you want to approve a reform in the Congress. And last but not least, let me finish with the good news that we have in Latin America is that most of the countries in Latin America, they have their own national development plan or national strategies in which we can take these national development plans as an instrument to implement the social contract. So here we see a very important connection between the social contract and these national development plans that can help at the end of the day to respond to the citizens' demand. Let me conclude the presentation with an aspect that is covering the report as well, that is about the international cooperation. So how to implement the reforms with the social contract at the local level, at the national level, but then at the international level, we need to rethink the international cooperation. This is something that when you look at the different surveys, there is a demand for the citizens to have further international cooperation. And behind this further international cooperation, we see in the development and transition approach that this cooperation needs to be in an equal footing, to share experiences, to transfer technologies. And in the context of the recovery, we see that sustainable financing is one of the key aspects that we need further cooperation as well. Of course, linked to the capacity building that is needed in the region and with, as I mentioned before, a dialogue in which we have different policymakers in an equal level. So these are the main messages that we have in the LEO 2021 report. So we analyze the impact of the crisis, the key elements that we see for the recovery at the fiscal level, at the social level, at the productivity level, and then we insist a lot on the political economy, in particular on the need to have a social contract and how at the end of the day we need as well further international cooperation, given the context of the crisis and the recovery for Latin America. So thanks a lot for this invitation as well. And now I will leave the floor to Professor Chris Alden.
Thanks very much, Sebastian. It was a wonderful review of both the macroeconomic conditions that have prevailed over the course of this terrible and complicated pandemic we've experienced globally and of course regionally in this case. It's also a wonderfully ambitious project to new social contracts and the like that you've laid out there. I think it's very exciting for that. While the audience gathers some of the questions, some have come in, but I encourage them to continue with that, put them in the Q&A box. What I would like to ask a question, sort of the usual thing of the chair, the abuse of the chair, where a chair gets to ask their own question. I was curious about the phenomena that we experienced in Europe, in the UK, which was the growth in the digital, commercial side of the digital, and of course, even as we speak, in terms of the social sector, education, we've all had to become much more savvy with our online interaction, and how that fits into your understanding of both what has happened, the trends during the last year or so, and secondly, the ambitions that you have in terms of seeing a recovery. I don't know, either of you or perhaps both of you can comment on that.
Okay, so I could start commenting that digitalization was a trend that preceded the crisis, and it accelerated and consolidated during the crisis. And we also saw that in Latin American countries. All the delivery technologies, all the meetings, everyone got into digital technologies. And in a way, a lot of the delivery platforms in the region actually helped buffer some of the losses and employment that we witnessed throughout the crisis. But it also highlighted the gaps that we have in terms of digital infrastructure in the region. And that is something that we particularly witness with schools. A lot of the children were having problems, I mean, to actually connect, because one thing is to have a smartphone, the other thing is to have a reliable internet service in your home that can allow you to attend lessons and also to complete your homework. So as Sebastian said, combining that with the fact that Latin America had one of the lengthiest gaps in terms of children not attending schools, this could have potential impacts in human capital accumulation in the future. So this highlights, I mean, there are two things here. This highlights the fact that digitalization also accelerated in Latin America, but it also highlights that we need to do the homework in terms of bridging the gaps that we have in infrastructure and access so that this trend consolidates. And the last thing I'm going to say is that we have a lot of use of digital technologies in the region, but not so much for productive uses. Firms in Latin America are not using technologies for tracking of their products to sell them. So that is something that needs to be addressed as well in order to seize this opportunity for increasing productivity.
Thanks.
Yes.
Sebastian.
Yeah, no, I just to add, this is actually the topic that we used for the LEO 2020 that was on digital transformation. And what we observed is that before the pandemic, we were talking about the digital transformation as an opportunity for the region. Now there is a need to go on that direction. as we have seen in terms of e-commerce, in terms of teleworking, in terms of e-learning. And one of the issues that we have is, as already Adriana mentioned, is the infrastructure. We see that in Latin America, close to 65% of the people are connected to internet. This is well below what we have at the OECD, that is close to 85% of people connected to internet. But beyond the infrastructure, we need to think about the skills and the inclusion, because this is one of the dimensions that we see, and this is key for the region. So at the end of the day, we need to have national digital agendas that we need to implement, and how to combine with the national development plans. So here, this is a key concern for the region when we look at the implementation of these national digital agendas, that we see that most of the countries they have, but now the question is how to implement them as is expected at the planning level.
Thanks very much. Now that sheds light on it. It's a very, as I said, it's a very ambitious, but necessary. We ourselves went from considerations of it being a good idea to one of necessity, in fact, in terms of the functioning of the future economy. Number of questions here. Let me see, where can I start? Let me start with Tatiana, who asks, would you recommend that property tax is raised in Latin American countries? So I'm going to open it to either or ask both of you if you want to comment on that.
Yes, I mean, that's something that we can share the data on this. I don't think that we have in the Leo's edition, but when we look at the property taxes in Latin America, it's still well below what we have at the OECD. It's even below the half of the levels of property taxes that we have at the OECD. So here is linked to the question of the progressivity of the taxation system. And again, that's an area of work in which we need better information as well on the property taxes that we have in Latin America. But from our side at the OECD, we see that this is a way in which we can improve the taxation level.
Did you want to come in on that, Adriana?
I'll pass to the next question, probably.
Okay. Let's see. from Carlos, how realistic is it for some countries in the region to recover economically from COVID if the actual health crisis is still ongoing?
The region actually has a very high vaccination rate, and that is helping to ease the effects of the crisis. In fact, we're not seeing that hospitals at this point are overwhelmed by the rise in the number of cases that we've seen with Omicron. And also there is a more adaptation to working with the pandemic at this point, and governments throughout the region were reluctant to impose further restrictions on mobility with the surge in Omicron. So at this point, I mean, unless, you know, a new variant comes along that is resistant to vaccines, I mean, we hope that doesn't happen, the region will continue recovering. Actually, you're seeing an increase in tourism that was the most lagged industry in the region, particularly affecting Caribbean countries. And we've seen an improvement in that recently. So I think unless we have a new bad surprise, the region will continue to keep up the pace of recovery that we've seen lately.
Sebastian, did you want to come in on that one?
No.
No, I like that you're okay, very firm.
I'm okay with Adriana, so
right.
I'm going to repeat what she said.
Can I actually follow up then and ask if some of the long term, what would you point to are the long term consequences of the pandemic in terms of changing the economic, the productive side of the economy. We've mentioned, you know, connectivity, digital economy as one possible area, but I wonder if there are others that we haven't discussed at this stage.
Well, I can also start with that one. There's some good news and some bad news. I mean, we have our opportunities with the energy transition. That is going to be actually the topic of the LEO next year. So that trend that we see right now is also going to affect the region, and we'll have to get into that. But that is, of course, an opportunity for the region. And the not so great news, or the possible scaring from the lag in the recovery of the labor markets. The longer workers remain out of the labor market or in informal jobs, the more likely it is that they lose skills or find it more difficult to return to formal and productive jobs. So, if we could have a permanent effect on the human capital accumulation stemming from the labor market conditions, but we could also have a permanent effect due to the losses in schooling that we had. And finally, if the region doesn't do a good job in terms of reallocating that employment, or could be efficiency losses that could directly affect productivity. So those are, you know, the downsides. But of course, these two new trends, the climate change and the energy transformation and digitalization, could open up opportunities to increase productivity and reassign resources more efficiently.
Yeah, probably just to add on what Adriana said, this is really important, the trends that we have at the global level and how it can affect the job market in Latin America. In particular, for the digital transformation, we see that if no action is taken, close to 20% of the jobs can disappear in the region. So that's why we need to focus on the skills needed, on the human capital, more generally, we need in Latin America, and the same we are going to do for the next LEO, on to see the impact on the job market given the green transition. So I don't have the number yet, but next year we can share with you as well the impact that you can have from the job market due to the green transition.
I suppose labor during this period, labor remittances and which is quite significant for some countries, especially in the Central America, Caribbean, were affected by this. And is that part, when you talk about people who are out too long, is that the kind of profile you're thinking about, people out of the labor market?
Not necessarily, because actually remittances increased by a large amount last year, probably because the U.S. assistant aid package was so generous that part of that just filtered through the region. So you saw a large increase in remittances in Mexico and in Central America. We're thinking about the young that were not able to get jobs, the women that decreased their participation during the pandemic because they had to take care of their homes, of the children, and that didn't allow them to keep working. And the workers that lost their employment and, you know, just entered the labor market in lower income and informal jobs or with low productivity. So those are the kind of workers that we're thinking about.
Okay, good. We have another question from Antonio. How can regional integration help if countries in the region are not willing to cooperate with each other? This is sort of a perennial, in fact, I think. The issue of cooperation across the region. Who would like to take that?
I mean, I kind of start. I mean, this is a good question. And what we see, and we insist on the LEO, is to have a pragmatic approach. And at the end of the day, is to go beyond these different regional agreements that we have within Latin America, like Pacific Alliance or Mercosur, and to see the activities in which we can have regional integration. And here we need to have the private sector really on board on this, and to see which are the constraints to go and to move forward on these different activities that can boost the regional integration in Latin America. So that's why we had this approach in the LEO, instead to have what's going on in each of the regional agreements that we have in Latin America. So in terms of cooperation, certainly we need to have the private sector as well involved in this. Just in a positive note, we had the Ibero-American Summit, where you have the heads of state of Latin America plus Spain, Portugal, and Andorra. And in the last meeting, for instance, they achieved a good cooperation in terms of public debt. So a common message that we see that in some areas, you can have a common message in terms of cooperation and coordination. So let's hope that's going to continue in other activities.
Now, and I'm going to add a few things on top of what Sebastian said. We have another flagship at CAF, the Reporte de Economía y Desarrollo, and this year's topic is precisely regional integration and trade. And one of the things that, I mean, very much in the same lines that Sebastian commented on, we think that taking a pragmatic approach, taking into account the existing trade agreements within the region, there's still a large scope of improvement in terms of investing in infrastructure for connectivity, which would lower the cost of importing and exporting in the region, and that could help regional integration. Also, all the measures instead of custom costs and all the transactional costs that you have to import and export could be lowered, and there could be more cooperation across countries. I mean, regardless of which agreement they belong to, and the improving the rules of origins within the same treaties and across treaties in the region. And finally, the integration into regional value chains. As Sebastian mentioned before and during the presentation, one of the key aspects that explains why Latin America lacks so much in the global participation in trade is because the low levels of trade within the region. So improving that, we should use this crisis to try to improve that and create more trade within the region to boost productivity in the future by taking a pragmatic approach.
That makes sense to me. I wanted to follow up some one of the speakers. Commentators from outside asked a question directly to Sebastian. He mentioned policy capture by the elites. How can you prevent this to maintain the integrity of public policy?
This is a really complex point because at the end of the day, you have some cultural aspects as well involved in this issue of the political capture. And what we see, and this is something that we need further work on this. This is one of the messages that we have as well in the LEO report, because when you look at the empirical evidence on this, you have few studies like Oxfam that did recently on Latin America. And we have the impression that we need to have better information about the different economic groups and the Congress in different countries in Latin America, and for particular reforms that have been implemented in the past. So I'm thinking about sectors in which there is a lack of there is oligopolies, or there is a way in which there is still further competition that is needed in some sectors. So that's closely related to the lack of competition, the lack of openness for some sectors, and that's an issue that when you look at the sectors, you have some tax incentives like tax expenditures that have been implemented for this sector. So this is closely related as well to some traditional policies supporting some economic sectors in Latin America. But as I said before, this is an area of work that I encourage all of your students to see more in detail these kind of issues.
Yes, very challenging and really sort of multifaceted. I think you said, as you said, it's a complex, it really opens up a complex set of sub-questions as well. I've got more, they're sort of piling in these questions, so maybe I'll do this one. Francisco, what are the main effects of the COVID crisis on the achievement of the SDGs, particularly in the Global South? I don't know who wants to jump forward.
You want to start again?
Go ahead.
Okay. Now let me highlight another report that we did last year. That's well-being in Latin America. So where we are in terms of well-being in Latin America, that's closely related to the SDGs. And when you look at the impact of the COVID-19 crisis on well-being, probably. The dimension in which we see a huge impact is on education, as we talked before, and how it's going to be very difficult to achieve the performance that we wanted to have some years ago. That's one of the dimensions that we see really important in terms of the well-being. And then what you have at the SDGs and we don't have at the well-being framework is about the financing side. And here, again, as Adriana mentioned before, is the lack of fiscal space that we have in Latin America, and in particular, the huge levels of public debt and the low levels of taxation that are going to affect certainly the financing of the SDGs gaps. So certainly, if I need to insist on two issues, fiscal and human capital.
Yes, and I'm just going to compliment that, leaving this idea. When the crisis started, everyone expected Latin America to have an even deeper crisis, that recovery was going to be more protracted, that we could even have another episode of debt sustainability, across the board. And that actually didn't happen. Of course, we have higher debt as every other country now experiences. Of course, for us, that is tighter because we need to spend more to reach all these SDG goals. But we're not in the situation that we were in the 80s. Actually, the recovery is allowing the region to go back to a trend that was to go back to the trend that we had before the crisis. Having said this, that trend is not that great, so we need to keep working and we need to spend more efficiently in order to do that, and that is going to be hard considering that the fiscal space that we have is more limited. Fortunately, there are fiscal rules in many countries, so returning to those fiscal rules and considering the credibility that they've created, I think will help some countries not to get into a strong consolidation process that could derail growth and impede the reaching of those goals in the future. But it's not going to be easy. But it's not a completely desperate situation as one might have thought in the past or at the most critical moments of the crisis.
Thank you. A question came through about report having been written before the crisis, the current crisis of the price volatility, Ukraine, all these sorts of things. And I had sort of two, the question is, what impact will this have on some of the projections or assumptions that you have? And I guess I had another one, which is sort of a methods thing. And how is it you deal? I mean, these are so-called black swan events. How does one, as was the pandemic itself, you know, development economists, how do you factor that in? Or is it just, this is how you experience it? We just adjust with these big events in terms of projections and what have you. So I leave it to either of you to jump in.
Well, I could. I don't know. So, Sebastian, do you want to start or you want me to?
No, please start. Yeah.
Okay. As forecasters, I think everyone did, including, I mean, ourselves, a lousy job in terms of projecting the depth of the crisis and the speed of the recovery. So this is really hard to forecast because most of our models rely on the past. And as you said, this is a type of black swan event that we didn't had in any model in mind. So this was really hard. And we tried, it was a process of trial and error to a certain extent initially, unless you consider some general equilibrium models that could give you different scenarios, and you can, you know, take whichever one you think is more plausible or less plausible. But it's very hard to predict. And in terms of the crisis in Ukraine, it is really hard to assess at this point how this crisis is going to unravel and to what extent this is going to have a global impact on growth. But the short-term effects of the crisis are pretty clear in terms of the increase of gasoline prices and the increase of grain prices because of the disruption in trade in two major exporters of energy and foodstuffs and also fertilizers. So we're seeing an impact in those prices, and of course it affects the terms of trade in Latin America, and that is how the shock is affecting the region. And that is going to imply an improvement in external accounts for net energy exporters in the region, and the country will take place in net energy importers in the region, namely Caribbean countries and Central American countries that have the largest exposures and the largest current account deficits. Having said this, countries have done a good job in the past few years in terms of building buffers and increasing international foreign currency reserves. So there's a buffer to deal with this in the short term. But the other effect is, of course, through inflation. And this crisis is kind of having, it's like adding insult to injury in terms of large inflation problems pre-existent in the region, and central banks in the region already increasing interest rates kind of aggressively compared to advanced economies. So considering also that energy and food have a heavier weight on the basket of consumers in Latin America compared to advanced economies, the impact on inflation will be larger, and this could further accelerate the increase in interest rates in the region, and that could potentially have an impact on growth. But the total effect is still hard to predict at this point, but these effects are going to manifest through external accounts, inflation, and possibly fiscal accounts, I mean, especially in those countries that subsidize energy and in those countries that have a large chunk of their revenues coming from the energy sector.
Just probably to add to what Ariana said, I mean, there is a key concern about the inflation numbers in US and how higher than expected U.S. inflation number is going to affect the world economic growth. And here, this is something that can affect certainly Latin American economies. And this is, Diana has already mentioned, this is still really uncertain what going to be the effect of the Ukraine crisis in Latin America. In particular, when you look at the financial markets, we see volatility in these markets, but we don't observe a huge depreciation or increase of the sovereign bond spreads today in Latin American markets, in contrast to what we had at the 1998 crisis in Russia. So that's a good news probably to Latin America if you do this comparative approach with the past. The last point, completely agree with Adriana, that we have a huge heterogeneity in Latin America. So the increases in commodity prices, the oil prices, agriculture prices, that's a good news for South America and Mexico, but certainly a bad news for Central America and the Caribbean.
Thank you. Another question from this case from Diego. How could a reduction of poverty be encouraged by a reduction in the wage productivity gap, which in fact has been widened by the crisis? Again, I don't know who wants to step in first.
Do you want to start, Adriana?
Let Sebastian start with the more difficult ones.
I mean, in terms of the first, a key aspect is about the wage determination and how you fix the minimum wage. This is a huge discussion in Latin America before the pandemic, and this is an aspect in which we need to see case by case in the region. And when you look at the different levels of minimum wage over the average wage, you're gonna see in countries in which there is no room to increases in terms of wage. And here you have some recent examples, like in Colombia, that the minimum wage increased by more than 10%. So this is a aspect that can affect price competitiveness with other economies in the world. So this is something to see, as I mentioned before, case by case, but certainly that goes beyond the wage determination, and then you need some productivity strategies that can create formal jobs. So at the end of the day is how you're gonna create some strategies that gonna improve the mechanism to have a better integration with the private sector and to have a clear a strategy to boost the formal jobs. And this is at the end of the day, let's say, the main objective.
I know, I completely agree. I think the key there is to try to foster improvements in productivity so you create more productive formal jobs that actually can allow you to increase wages according to productivity. I mean, from an economic theory standpoint, that's exactly what you need. I mean, of course, there are different ways in every country to determine wages, but you cannot depart substantially without creating further distortions in markets, in labor markets, if you keep fixing wages very differently from what productivity tells you. So the key here is to increase productivity.
I'm sorry, more questions are coming through, so time is also passing. So I'm going to jump to another question from Renee. How can Latin America and the Caribbean achieve, what can it do to achieve or to protect lives, to recover and push for green transition under what is being called a tight fiscal space?
You want to start, Adriana?
Well, I think, okay, I'll start with this one. There's still space to increase efficiency in spending in Latin America. And of course, there's a thorny issue, but we keep subsidizing in many countries fossil fuels. So that is something you may want to think about and take into account with the green transition, because most of these subsidies are distortionary in the sense that they're regressive. I mean, you end up benefiting the rich in the population as opposed to the people that that need it. So those could be reconfigured and leave some space to devote to social spending. I think even with what we have at this point, there's still space to improve efficiency in spending, and also in the medium term, what we mentioned in terms of rethinking your tax policies and coming up with a more progressive taxation. Of course, that's need this other part of reducing informality, because tax systems in Latin America and also pension systems are dented by informality. So you need to work on the two fronts. So in the short term, think about efficiency and spending. In the medium term, think about improving your taxation policy and also tackling productivity issues to create to increase formality.
I mean, I completely agree with Adrián. I mean, that there is the issue on the spending side, how to rethink the different mechanisms that make that the current expenditure in Latin America is regressive. So that's related to the pension system, for instance, is something that this is a reform that still is lacking in most of the countries in the region. And then on the taxation side, certainly you can increase the progressivity, you can increase your levels of taxes without affecting the recovery, without affecting entrepreneurship that is needed in Latin America. I will just add, in terms of the public debt management, how we need as well further international coordination and international cooperation when we think about new instruments like SDGs, linked bonds, or green bonds, that there is a room to exploit in Latin America.
Thank you. here's a question that came in that I think is quite specific, but of interest certainly to people, which is your report speaks about countries like El Salvador. What are the consequences of their decision to adopt cryptocurrencies as legal tender in the middle of the recovery? Is it a model to be followed, I suppose, is it an follow-up to that?
I mean, the only thing that we can say from our side is that we are working on this right now. We are doing a multidimensional country review of El Salvador, so we will have some answers to these questions soon.
Okay, watch this. Go ahead.
No, we're also trying to investigate the possible consequences. That's with every measure. I mean, there are some advantages, but some in terms of the use of this currency, but there could be some risks as well, and those need to be assessed. But it was a decision of the government, and we completely respect that. But more work needs to be done in terms to fully understand the implications of this measure.
Okay, fair enough. I think that we have time for just a couple more questions, and I would turn it over to our colleague, Ignacio Corazzoli, in a moment. Let me just ask one last question, and that I see here, and there are others as well, I'm afraid, but we will run out of time. What specifically can Latin American and Caribbean countries do to foster large-scale entrepreneurship?
Do you want to start, Liliana?
No, you can start.
Thank you. You're so kind.
I know the question is particularly tight when people are back and forth like that. So yes, go ahead.
No, I would say that to insist on one point that we have in the Leo report, and is at the end of the day, we need a clear strategy. And this is something that still is lacking in Latin America, where you need to involve the private sector and to define the clear mechanisms in which you can boost entrepreneurship. And here we need to take into account the global trends, digital transformation and the green transition. So we need to boost formal jobs. Certainly you need a large scale. And by taking into account these global trends, by taking into account the comparative advantage that we have in each of the regions, not only at the national level, but as well at the subnational level, we can figure out this large scale entrepreneurship that we need in Latin American economy. So again, we have a lot of national development plans, we have national strategies, but we need further integration with the priorities at the private sector, with the civil society involved in this agenda, and with medium-term implementation of these agendas that requires an investment plan that goes beyond the political cycle. So that's something that at the end of the day, you have the private sector, the civil society that can help to go beyond this political cycle.
I would add to that that this is a structural issue in Latin America. We have a huge fraction of firms or small firms in Latin America, and we don't have as many medium-sized or large firms. And in order to change that, you have to tackle some structural shortcomings. I mean, on the side of firms, you need to have the right incentives for firms to grow, and that involves a number of issues, including taxation, trade facilitation, efficiencies in the provision of public goods throughout the region, but also on the labor market side. I mean, you need to strengthen the skills of workers so that firms find the right type of human capital to hire, and also facilitate the reallocation of work throughout firms. And that also requires training, but also creating, you know, the proper skills set through education so that workers are flexible and workers adapt to the new trends, as Sebastian mentioned, and digitalization, of course, is one of those trends. So you need to look at both ends in order for firms to create more jobs, to grow, but then to have the workers thoroughly able to do those jobs.
Yes, thank you very much. I think all of this leads me to ask a broader question, which is how can regional development banks help with the recovery in this context? And I think that perhaps this is the right point at which to invite Dr. Ignacio Corlazzoli Hughes, who is manager in Europe, Asia, and the Middle East at CAF, the Development Bank of Latin America, and a longstanding professional career with the Inter-American Development Bank before that, as well as other crucial and important roles. If I could turn it over to you, Ignacio, for both that question and a kind of summary of how you see things.
Thank you, Professor. I wasn't planning to answer such a tough one, but thank you so much. I mean, I'm going to reply to you. I want to thank you, first of all, the LSE. I want to thank you for moderating today's event, but also, I mean, I saw that Gary Jones is also here. So special thanks to Gary Jones, with whom I've been working before. I want to thank all panelists, especially my colleague Adriana and my good friend Sebastian, who's here today with us. And I was very pleased to see, as a former LSE alumni, that LSE students are still giving you tough questions. I was pleased to see, especially on the one Sebastian addressed to you on the policy capture by elites. I think that was my essay at the LSE a long time ago, so I was very intrigued by that one. And I think having the slogan of policies, public policies to improving better lives, I think that goes very fit well with you. So Adriana went to the fiscal situation and Sebastian to the social protection this time. And, but we didn't discuss much. I think there's one key element, two key elements that we needed to discuss more. And that's where development banks come in. First thing is trust. I mean, there was a recent report by the Inter-American Development Bank on trust being key to social cohesion in the region. I think that's something we need to discuss for the future. And then the consequences, which is, of course, of all this political discontent. You must have seen The Economist recently, which has 11 of the 12 recent global elections went for the position, no? So we have upcoming elections in the region in two big countries. I think all the content that Adrian and Sebastian exposed to you today have major political consequences for the region. And that's where we have to come in as development banks. So we've been working, and the CAF is positioning itself as a green bank, the green development bank for the region. We're going to be raising 40% of our lending for green projects. That's one, which is one of the issues that was raised by many students, and as well for the recovery bank. So that's an institution which are public institution and publicly owned need to be considering. We had a major, I mean, last week with Adrian in Paraguay. We had our governors entrusted a major recapitalization of the bank, and we position ourselves precisely to address those concerns that you've been raising today. And we're looking forward to do so much more. And among them with the LSE, where we're trying to be to reach, to use the LSE as a platform, as a, to strengthen our partnership that we used to have and want now to enforce again. And I'm very glad, I just wanna close with the words at the very beginning, using the platform as a layer that we have, working together with the OECD, ECLAC, European Commission, and now the LSE. As a new partners for this precise report. So thank you so much for today's participation, and looking forward, Chris, to do more with you.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing this platform with us. Thank you to the speakers who provided a really rich vein of ideas and thoughts and observations about the situation we face today, in terms of the recovery and the like. I think that it would be I'd be remiss for not thanking all the colleagues from CAF, of course, like yourself, Ignacio, the LSE alums. I'm always pleased to discover, you know, scratch an economist and you find an LSE alum somewhere in there, I think. So I'm very, very pleased to be able to share the platform with you, and that our colleagues from OECD. Thank you again, and the students that have participated, the colleagues from LAC, the Latin American and Caribbean Center, Gareth Jones, amongst others, and of course, my LSE Ideas colleagues who've put together a great program and helped kick off a very good series of what we hope to be a future set of discussions around questions of development, challenges of the pandemic, and the future of the region, Latin America and the Caribbean. Great. Okay, well, thank you once again, everyone, and have a good evening or rest of your day. And we will stay in touch for our next set of events. Thanks very much.